This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever in the world you are, this is David Sammel with a special sod. This is an episode where I'll be talking mindset and tennis with John Silk from Talking Tennis, which we're going to do at various times during the year, especially during major tennis tournaments. Enjoy.
I know we touched on approaches to matches, and we also touched on it even in today's show of how you deal with certain mental challenges. And I think probably to the casual observer like myself, you know, we do wonder what is it like walking out on the hallowed turf at Wimbledon, for example, whether you're on center court or elsewhere, whether you're ranked 800 or 2 or 1. It's all can be very new and can be very anxious, but also you could be at the end of your career and have a different kind of pressure. And, you know, I think many of us just casual observers know what we're like on the day of our driving test. And I remember myself, my foot is like this on the clutch pedal and you sort of just want it all to be over and done with. Well, of course, as a tennis player, you sort of have this mixture of, or a sports star in general, you know, you don't want it over and done with because you're supposed to enjoy this. Driving test, you're not necessarily supposed to enjoy. We all understand that. But this is what we're here for. What do you do as a coach? I mean, you've coached dozens of players over dozens of big matches, over all the biggest tournaments in the world. What do you sense stuff on the day of the first round at a major or second or third round against a Boris Becker or whoever you're coming up against? Do you sort of go, I think I know how my guy is feeling. I think I know what to do. And yeah, just talk us through that.
Yeah, I think first round is very different from the rest of the tournament. First round, everybody is very apprehensive. It's difficult, but you do get a sense that if the player is in a really good place, that as long as they put their game on the court, they're going to play a good match. And if they play a good match, they've got a good chance of winning. And that's a nice place to be. There are times when you're going into a first round where the player's either a little undercooked or the form has not leading up into a major is not being good. And then you're much more nervous about the unknown quantity of what the player is going to put out on the court. And you've got to try to get a sense for where the player is mentally themselves. And hopefully they'll be honest enough with you to tell you about the
the insecurities that they're mm-hmm. feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do that, then you can deal with it before they walk on the court. It's, you know, and then every now and again, you just get a sense where it's just not going to happen. And that's a really rough place for mm-hmm. you to get as a coach, to try somehow turn the mindset around, somehow to unstick, get them unstuck in a place where they're, you know, pretty negative about their game and negative about their chances. And, you know, if you can turn those situations around, you're really earning your money, because, and in those situations, I try to think outside the box and do things that are a little different. You know, one year I had a player that was very stuck in a bad place and just made him go and walk in the wilds for a couple of hours
mm-hmm.
without a phone, and just said, go walking, be with nature, and come back and see how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that somehow broke the spell, and he performed well. I've had another situation where a player was playing, a very, very big player on a big court. First time on a huge court, very, very nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And I took her around the court early in the morning before anybody got there, just mm-hmm. to get a feel for the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat her down, you know, on the side of the court there and talked to her about what she's achieved to get there and the fact mm-hmm. that she's earned the right to be there. And then the other perspective I gave her is, I said, you do realize that what you're going to experience today is something that, you know, you can't buy. Billionaires could want this experience and they can't have it.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you have to earn.
Mm-hmm.
If you've earned it, you are going to experience something that, you know, every tennis player who doesn't ever get to experience this will have dreamed about, and you will have dreamed about it, and you know, millions of others would give anything to experience this. So mm-hmm. whatever happens, at least your tennis has gotten good enough to have this experience.
Yeah.
And if you think further, though, if you're thinking like this is going to be your only experience of this, then I think that's also not the place to be, because you want to feel in your head that this is the first of many. Because if you're feeling like it's the only time you're going to experience this, then you're basically saying that today is the pinnacle of my career and it's all downhill from here. Or you're going to say, today is the pinnacle of my career so far,
mm-hmm.
beginning of a lot more.
Exactly. I mean, by the way, often if today is the pinnacle of your career, it could also mean tomorrow or the next day is the pinnacle of your career. If you're in the third round of Wimbledon, for example, and that's the yeah. furthest you've ever been. What I've just written down is a couple of words or three or four words regarding some of the things you've just said. I was really interested in the honesty and the frankness that a player maybe needs to have of going, I am very nervous. Even just saying the words, coming back to my driving test, I think I tried to suppress and it didn't make it any better. You know, it was the second test when I just said, yeah, I am anxious. I want to pass and I want to get this over and done with. And I think it helped me relax a bit. And I think that perhaps as well, David, is there also an element of going, this is normal to be nervous, that actually sometimes we don't think it's normal to be, you know, to be like this, but actually, you know, it's abnormal to be like Novak Djokovic, if you like, even Raf. Go on, tell me.
Novak will get just as nervous.
Okay.
This is the thing is, you know, the best players in the world, their confidence comes from not the fact that they're not going to be nervous. Their confidence comes from the fact that they know that I've been nervous many, many times like this. Mm-hmm. And I know exactly how to deal with it.
Very and good.
Because I know how to deal with it, I know I will be able to put a good level out there, no matter how nervous I am.
Yeah.
And that is the place where you're trying to get players to where they accept the nerves, but they're so confident that however they're feeling out there, they will still be able to put a level out there that really performs well, despite the nerves. And that's where the best in the world have gotten is that it doesn't matter how nervous they are. They know how to handle it, and they will still put a very good level out there. So they're not afraid of the nerves. In fact, I think it was Matthew Pinsent, the row, who said that, you know, I started to look at nerves like part of the furniture. If I didn't have them, I would have really worried.
Yeah. So it's a case of embracing them, I guess, and accepting them. Or just know, I've been nervous before, and I've won tennis matches whilst being nervous. It's okay.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, the opponent is not sitting there unnervous.
Right. That reminder,
They're very nervous too. So you're going out there to see who handles the nerves the best.
Yeah.
And whoever handles the nerves the best is probably going to come out on top, because the standards are very, very, very close. Everybody has the odd match where they just can't shake the nerves, because normally the nerves are really there. Warm up, it gets a little better. After the first two or three games, players settle down and then they just play and the nerves go. And then they only come back in the crucial moments, you know, 4-all, 30-40, you know, you're going to be a little tight. But, you know, in between, they get on, just play. I think where you get the amazing matches is when players go beyond nerves and they just fighting and playing, you know, both of them in the zone. And no matter how, you know, tight the match is, they're so tuned in that they just both play their best tennis. And we've seen some of the classic matches where the tennis under pressure gets better and better because they're so keyed in and the desire is so high and the adrenaline's pumping and it, all these things in the right way. And these are just phenomenal contests because it actually then just comes down to the artistry of both players. And I do think when it gets to that place and that sort of flow, it is like art, you know, it is like a dance between two players, and the unforced error count is very low. And I think people in the stadium can feel that.
Yeah.
When a team is flowing, when players are flowing, and that is what we all aspire to in our lives, to have those periods where everything's just flowing amazingly well. And it's just awesome to watch.
There were a few matches that have raced through my head in the last 5 minutes. I'm thinking third set between Rafa and Novak at the French Open. You talk about being in the zone and just phenomenal levels, just getting higher and higher. Of course, Rafa and Roger at the 2008 Wimbledon final. But even that final was laced with nerves from both players at various points, particularly Rafa, who was trying to win his first Wimbledon, I think. And there was something else as well, from which is going to augment what you were saying about, you know, having been there and been anxious before and got over the line. I spoke to Aryna Sabalenka in a press conference a few weeks ago, and I said, oh, there was a few coincidences today between the Madrid final and the final that she'd had in Australia. And I said, by the way, it was 2 hours, 27 minutes in both or something like that. And I said, and by the way, 4 championship points, does that sound familiar to you? And she laughed and she said, yeah. And I said, were you thinking about the Australian Open final in that last game in Madrid against Iga? And she said, funny enough, yeah, I was. I was thinking, you know, I think she was 30-40 down in that game as well. And she obviously was facing break points as well, I think, against Sabalenka. And she just said it, yeah, it all came back to me. It's like, I've been here before. It's okay. If I can win Australia 4 championship points, facing break points, trying to serve it out, I'm sure I can win Madrid, you know? And that kind of that kind of thing of you, as you're saying, it's okay. It's all right. I've been here before and I'm sure I'll be here again. And I think that does, that certainly helps. There was one other match that raced through my head, actually probably over the last half an hour, but at various points. I think it was when you said, you know, there's just sometimes when it's just, you know, it's just so the anxiety is just too much. And, you know, it's just, match I'm thinking of was, go on.
Are you going to pick Djokovic Medvedev US Open final?
No, but I do. Yeah. I think that's a good candidate because you're right. And that's probably when you were thinking of that 10 minutes ago when you went, wait on Novak being calm and cool and collected. Because you're right. He's punching his leg at one point in that second set because he just can't get his legs moving. And I think that's probably quite interesting. And the match I was going to mention, David, Jana Novotna, Steffi Graf with that breakup.
I cannot watch
the 5 or 10 minute documentaries and clips. I haven't found the full match, but I cannot watch the 5 or 10 minute clips of her career, if you like, without, you know, welling up, because that loss that she had to Steffi Graf, a double breakup, 40-30, she double faults. David, do you ever even look at the manner of the fault when it's like 2 meters out? That's like a, there's, I don't know, that's how it is for me as a fan. And she goes about 2 meters out on one of her serves, and I'm thinking, oh dear.
Yeah. I mean, you do sometimes look at the manner, but if you're actually there live, you can feel it. You can feel the tension. You can feel that this is, something's going wrong right now. And that's a horrible feeling if it's your player. It's a pretty good feeling if it's the opponent that you suddenly see, you know.
And Steffi felt it, I'm sure.
Oh, she, 100%.
And she gets better. It helps her, you know. I mean, vicious.
You suddenly feel them go. I think another match that comes to mind is Agassi, Todd Martin.
Okay.
He was 2-0, 4-1 down.
This is Agassi, is it? Was 4-1 down, 2-0 down?
Yeah, 2-0, 4-1 down.
I mean, I'm guessing, just because of the magnitude of the two players, I don't know the match you're talking about, but it as soon as you... Okay, and I'm guessing Todd Martin goes on to lose, does he?
Yeah, and Agassi sat on the change, I actually thought, and said, you know, this guy's blown a 5-1 lead in a final. In a semi-final before. Against Malabai Washington in the fifth set.
Okay. Was that the year him and Stich probably contested the final? Was it him and Stich?
No, the final then was...
Richard Krajicek.
Krajicek beat... won that one. And Agassi said he actually thought on the changeover, you know, just hang in. Let's see if I can be here for another half an hour and see what it's like then. Mm-hmm. And Todd Martin started to wobble, and you could feel the whole momentum switch happen. So it's happened to really, you know, world class players. There's probably not a player on the planet. There isn't a player on the planet who's not experienced a meltdown, either, you know, benefiting from it or creating it. The opportunity for the other player. But that's why, you know, sport, no matter how much data we get, no matter how much sports science, no matter how much happens, the reason why people are always going to love sport is the human element that you cannot take out. And that human element is where all the drama lives. And, you know, it's... It's very frustrating sometimes as a coach and obviously for a player, but equally you have to be respectful of it because that is what makes sport wonderful. Otherwise, if the best players always perform to their best, they would win all the time and it wouldn't be interesting. The idea that there can be an upset is what makes sport, you know, fantastic. And, you know, I mean, the other meltdown that you bring to mind is a totally different sport. Greg Norman, six shots up on Nick Faldo.
I remember that. Would that be, I think that was probably 96 because I was doing my GCSEs on Nick Faldo. Yeah.
That was painful to watch. I mean, every now and again, there's a meltdown that is actually hard to watch because, you know, it's almost, you know, I haven't experienced, but I'd say it almost is teetering on the edge of a nervous breakdown.
Yeah, the thing is though, when you see a meltdown or unfortunately the loss of nerve or momentum like Todd Martin had, in a way it's kind of worse because at least Greg Norman won a few majors, you know, and and I'm just trying to think of, I mean, that's the thing. Back to the beauty of that story of Jana Novotná. Thank goodness she did get over the line 5 years later. Because she also lost another Wimbledon final, but that I can't think of a more famous example in tennis anyway of a starker example, I should say, than that of just, and you can, I think it's because we can empathize as well. So, I mean, we've never been in a Wimbledon final, but we all imagine what it would be like. And we can, 98% of the people in the crowd are sort of feeling it, as you say, and probably 100% actually. Yeah. And it's just, the other golfing example, there was a French guy who sort of, your mind starts doing unusual thing. The French guy who dived into the water at the Open.
Lefebvre or something. Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
I can't remember his name right now, but. That would have been 99, I think.
When Tom Watson was leading the Open at 57 years of age and chasing him was, he's finished in the top 3, 5 so many times. Great British golfer from Nottingham. Woosnan keeps coming into my head, but it's not Woosnan. And he was so intent on what Watson was doing, he didn't really focus on his own golf and missed the opportunity, and somebody else won it. And Montgomery, the same thing. Colin Montgomery at the US Open was so worried about Mickelson in the chasing behind that somebody in the clubhouse won it because both him and Mickelson melted down.
I'm just wondering, did Mickelson ever? I'm not a huge golf fan, but I remember that Greg Norman example. Did Mickelson win a major?
Oh, he's won 6, but
oh, okay. I remember him trying to get over the.
Montgomery never won one.
Yeah, I know Montgomery. I mean, actually, again, we talk about classic examples. He's probably the one in, and yet, David, and maybe this brings us back to tennis to some extent. We would see Montgomery in a team environment thrive under that kind of impression, and that's really interesting. How we, you know, I mean, we need a bit more. What's the word? A few more examples, but we see someone like Belinda Bencic doing very well for Switzerland, and then suddenly like this, and maybe certain players in a team environment are very cool with carrying the team and helping the team. And David, something I sometimes think about, and I know, again, I'm a human being, I'm not a professional tennis player, and unfortunately, I think at 43, probably have missed that boat. Is sometimes I try to just think a bit positive rather than, I know this sounds a bit corny, but rather than, oh no, what happens if I miss, I'm thinking about pool, by the way, or snooker now, what happens if I miss this shot? Sometimes I just try to think about, what's the thinking about if I get it in, if I win this point, if I get this, and I know it's a very subtle difference and easier said than done, but sometimes I do think to myself, this will be pretty cool if I get this pretty tricky shot in.
What I sometimes say to players is, you know, a point is a 50-50. Okay. You know, the person serving, okay, has the advantage only until you've hit a good return. But if you hit a good return, then the point is 50-50. Why not give both sides of the four matches 50-50? Why feel like the negative result has a bigger chance than the positive result? Literally give the positive result the same respect as you do a negative result. that, you know, it, the match is 50-50. So be positive that, you know, why can't the positive side happen? You know, the negative side can happen and the positive side can happen. So at worst, be 50% positive about it, because, you know, don't be 80% negative and 20% positive. Well, that's it, folks, for another episode of David Samuels Nuggets. I hope you enjoyed it, and I will speak to you again next week. As usual, please follow me on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google, and check out the show notes where you can sign up to my newsletter. Goodbye, and let's speak again next week. Podcast Network.